Tonight, we once again play What's That From with Dan Katowski and Scott Stantis. Then later, Brandon Weatherby continues his live coverage of the DNC. But first, Representative Sarah Feigenholtz gives us an insider perspective. All that and more right now on Pretty Late with Patty Vasquez.
Well, let's get right to it. We have Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle is on the line with us. How are you doing?
Hi.
Hi, Madam President. How are you doing?
I'm good. It's a little noisy on the bus going back to the hotel, but it's been a great evening, and I thought Hillary Clinton gave a great speech.
There was so much talk all day. You know, she's not a great, you know, speaker. People were wondering whether or not she's going to wear a pantsuit. I'm guessing being inside of all that, you're just anticipating what message are we going to get out there? But in particular, what a historic night. How did that feel being in that convention center?
I was pretty amazing. You know, I had the good fortune to be at the convention from 2008 to 2012. And there was the same kind of electricity, I think, in the arena. It was a historic moment.
Oh, we do. That bus drove off. Hopefully, there are a lot of people communicating by cell phone. I know that some of the people she's traveling with have been trying to load pictures, and they said that they can't because so much bandwidth is being used. And Rob Martier, when I was up in the newsroom, I was saying that it's a herstoric night. I like being
corny. Herstoric, yes.
Herstoric.
You can do that.
I can do that. Yeah, when there are no ceilings, the sky is the limit. And I thought that was there were some great lines. There were some moments that, let's try again. President, Cook County Board President, Tony Preckwinkle, did someone take your phone from you? Is that how crowded it is on that bus? Hello?
Yes.
Hi.
Sorry, my phone connection seems to be a little dicey here.
Well, we can hear you now. We'll see how long we can go, and we so appreciate your time, by the way. When Hillary started speaking, what was going through your mind as a politician, as a woman, as a Democrat?
Well, I thought it was a great day. You know, I listened to Michael Bloomberg yesterday, who, of course, is not a Democrat, talk about the fact that Hillary was the only sane and competent person in the race. And I truly concur. I mean, she came across tonight as a very sensible, reasonable, calm person. The kind of person that trusted leadership of not only the Democratic Party, but the country. And I think she was very well received in the arena, and I hope she was well received by the folks at home.
And when you mentioned that being the same person in the race, I thought she had a great line when she said, when you can bait a man with a tweet, you cannot trust him with a nuclear weapon. What are your thoughts on that line?
Well, I think there was a lot of laughter. I mean, if you look at the kinds of things that Donald Trump has said in his tweet, I mean, it makes you wonder about whether or not he's really got it all together. I mean, it just, he's explosive, he's unpredictable, he's volatile, he's demeaning and denigrating. I mean, he doesn't come across as the kind of person that you want, to be the leader of your country.
I have to say, I thought it was a remarkable speech. I know that for women, you know, that line, I just said it before you came back, that when there are no ceilings, the sky is the limit. I think there was a lot of that energy of the kind of the importance of the moment of that entire speech. How long have you been anticipating a woman getting the nomination to run for president?
Well, I'm 69 years old, and I've often said that I never thought that I'd live to see an African-American as president of the United States or a woman as president of the United States. And now, God willing, I'll see both.
Because I was with my mom, and my mom and I were crying a little bit because it didn't occur to me how important that would be. And there had to have been a lot of misty eyes in that arena.
I think that I think many people were moved in a way that they didn't really anticipate. It was surely an exhilarating night for me. She delivered her speech well. She was very thoughtful. I think she made a great impression.
I think so, too. And by the way, it was great seeing you next to President Clinton earlier in the week. What was that like?
Well, you know, that whole thing was kind of accidental, and I ended up sitting next to him during Michelle Obama's speech. You know, clearly moved him. He was impressed that the First Lady was so kind to Secretary Clinton and that she went out of her way to praise her and also to kind of call the Bernie Sanders people to account and talk about got back in and worked hard for Barack from the convention to November, and then she accepted his offer to be Secretary of State. So I thought he was moved by both her praise for Hillary Clinton and her willingness to kind of say to the Bernie Sanders people, this is what you need to do, and you need to follow Hillary Clinton's good example. And then, of course, in a way, without ever mentioning Donald Trump, she kind of skewered him, which was nice, too.
Right. Did you get the sense that the Bernie supporters that the way she kind of wanted to fold that in and had some comments and statements and wanting to embrace his supporters, do you think that went any way to heal some wounds?
Well, you know, we work closely with the Bernie Sanders delegates in Illinois and pretty much had everybody on board for Hillary, one or two exceptions. There were a couple of states, California and Washington State, where there seemed to be a contingent that wasn't ready to accept that this is the way the process has played out. And, you can either join the team or you can, you know, be at the margins in a race where the choice is between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump. And, I think the overwhelming majority of Sanders realize that Hillary Clinton is the best choice in November.
Well, and we talked a little bit about this earlier, I know, on Justin Kaufman's show, the idea that the DNC showed, you know, that there may be, that there was a conspiracy in the emails to favor Hillary Clinton. How are the conversations in regards to that at the convention this week?
Well, I think that Donna Brazil, who's taking over from Congresswoman Schwartz, is going to be a great leader of the party. She's apologized for not just the leak and what they showed, but the involvement of the DNC in the presidential election. And I think we'll all just move forward from here. I think it's a regrettable incident, but we're moving on, and the person who was in charge at the time has stepped aside.
Well, it's been an amazing weekend, and the amazing 2 weeks, really, listening to both sides. How would you, for people who perhaps didn't listen to the speech, because a lot of people tune out, they just figure, I'll do what's important and I'll figure it out later. Well, how would you compare this week to the RNC last week?
Well, I will tell you the truth. I didn't really look at the Republican convention. I find it'd be very hard on my good humor and equilibrium, and I decided not to subject myself to it.
Fair enough.
Only speak to this convention, and it was amazing from the First Lady's speech on Monday night to Bill Clinton's effort to kind of share with people what Hillary was really like as a professional person and as a wife and mother and grandmother, to the speeches last night. President Obama, of course, and Vice President Biden and Tom Kaine. It was a pretty amazing convention.
Well, we wish you the very best, and hopefully someday you can stay up late with us and join us live in the Allstate Showcase studio during this election season.
I'd be happy to do that sometime next week. I'm kind of on a flight tomorrow, but later in the day. But I'd be happy to do that and to talk with you about my reflections.
Absolutely. And for what's going on in Cook County, of course. We've been talking to Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle. Be safe, and we look forward to seeing you in the studio.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Of course. Our pleasure. Thank you. More after this on 720 WGN. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. All kinds of friends of ours are at the Democratic National Convention. And then we find out that there were guests that were supposed to be on on Justin Kaufman's show, and they're willing to be on our show. We'll take everybody. But I feel bad because Brandon Weatherby, who we've had on all week, I realized last night we kind of like, hey, you're kind of, we're just going to, you know, there we've got reps and we got people there. We're going to move you to the, I don't mean to keep moving him to the back of the line, but he did a different event tonight. So we're curious about that. We will hear from him after midnight. We have Representative Sarah Feigenholtz coming on after 11:30. I know Senator Dan Katowski will be in studio shortly. And we also have, I guess, Representative Janczkowski will be on the line with us shortly. She was supposed to be on Justin's show. I don't think I've ever spoken to her, and I don't know why. It's weird. Usually I talk to people I've met before, so you kind of have that sort of shared experience. I've never met President Preckwinkle. I'm meeting them on my show, so I'm very nervous and excited. Hello, Senator Katowski, joining us in studio. You look a little bit like there, maybe there was a lot of traffic. Was there a lot of traffic? Because like right there by the North Avenue, it starts to bunch up a little bit on the Kennedy, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah, with the construction.
Yeah, yeah.
Does it make you stressed when you're like flying along and all of a sudden screeching halt?
I'm so happy to be here.
Are you
on the way here, the process is, I'm just trying to get into this mode of, you know, every time I come here, it's a bucket list moment. So I'm like, so I get to hang out with Patty Vasquez, be on the radio.
Well, and I'm guessing you watch the
talk and listen.
Rob Martyr up in news.
No way.
And now he's up there.
He's back.
Good to be here.
Hello.
Great. One of the best radio voices in the business.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you very much.
Right next to Esmeralda in the huge cup over there.
She does not have. Does she
You're
have a big,
welcome.
Does she have a big cup again?
Yes, she does. Look at it. It's massive.
It's not that big. You saw it earlier, Patty.
It's not. I was up there. The camera adds
things are large,
20
yeah.
ounces.
20 ounces to the cup.
Craig Collins in the producer's booth, and we are taking your calls if you wanted to join us in the conversation anytime, 312-981-7200. I get some grief, whether it's on Facebook or texting, and people ask me, they want me to be unbiased, you know, when it comes to, I guess, the presidential campaign. They confuse me with a journalist. I have my own opinions. I do think that Donald Trump is not the most rational person to be occupying the executive
office.
It's the
jean jacket. That's the
jean jacket?
Yes.
They've confused me for a journalist?
Yes.
Like,
yes.
I'm ready to go anyway?
Yeah, like you're ready to go.
It's the inside pockets. I might have my notepad right there to take
right.
notes. And
yeah.
You know, Representative Feigenholtz called me a reporter last week, and I didn't correct her, and I felt bad. But I'm a talk show host, so I'm not pushing. We have a conversation. I'll listen to what you have to say, and I have, you know, I have thoughts on it.
You are much fairer than I want you to be.
Oh, am I?
Yeah.
Okay.
No, you're very fair. Well, I don't think people really recognize if they are criticizing that the lengths that you go to make sure that all sides are heard. And it's, you know, as someone who knows you and knows you well about issues that you care about, I don't ever say that my conversations we've had about you are like singularly focused on a political party. It's just on needs that you're concerned about.
Right.
And so it's never really been about politics or the party related to a particular agenda. Regarding your feelings, I find it interesting.
I wept tonight. The music started. She walked out in that white suit, and to have the first woman, you know, who is the nominee for the president of the United States, you know, and it was never that I never thought. We talked to President Preckwinkle, who said that she never thought an African American would be president or that a woman would be president in her lifetime. And perhaps, you know, the benefit of having, you know, being a little bit younger than I have always thought. Maybe it was Geraldine Ferraro or it was, you know, some of the women that have. And Elizabeth Dole. Look, you know, if people think that I'm on one side or the other, like I listen to Elizabeth Dole. I'm driven to women representing us, you know. I remember one time I was on stage at Zanies and I mentioned that there were at the time in the 90s, I believe it was only 16% of the senators in Congress or the congressmen were women, and someone thought that I was wrong, and it was before we all really used Google as much, and so I couldn't do it from the stage, but that was an accurate number at the time, and that's not representative of us.
No.
And we've gotten to a point where we have a woman who is, you know, on the cusp of perhaps becoming the president of the United States. And it depends on what people find important, right? Where, how they are taking their current situation and reflecting that back and what they want from this country.
Did you notice the change that occurred in her demeanor when she accepted the nomination? It was like this just exhale occurred. And suddenly she was more at ease than I've ever seen her been. In terms of her presentation in the history of her public life.
Right.
And to me, I was like, because when the speech began, I was like, oh, well, you know, this is good for her. And I think she's, you know, she's presenting her case well. And then all of a sudden she accepted the nomination. She's like, okay, I'm ready to go. And I found it to be, I'm kind of a sucker for these conventions in many respects, because it reminds me why I've done what I've done
as a public servant.
And to me, seeing the people who are represented, they do just represent, in so many cases, the best of America. And it's really, to me, it's very inspiring. And I made my kids watch tonight, and I said,
let's talk about this in a little, because I want to talk about watching it with your kids, because I watched with Griffin, but I watched the whole 2 weeks. We watched a lot of the speeches from both sides. I know President Preckwinkle said that she avoided it, but I've been watching. I want to hear what is making people, what's what they're passionate about, what they're afraid of, what's important to them. More when we come back after this on 720 WGN.
People ask me all the time, how does she do it? How does she keep going amid the sound and the fury of politics? Here's how. It's because she never, ever forgets who she's fighting for. She's worked to make it easier for foster kids to be adopted, for our 9/11 first responders to get the health care they deserve, for women around the world to be safe, to be treated with dignity, and to have more opportunities. Fights like these, they're what keep my mother going. They grab her heart and her conscience, and they never, ever let go.
That's Chelsea Clinton as she was about to introduce her mother at the Democratic National Convention, where Hillary Clinton accepted the nomination, the first woman to become the nominee of a major political party. Joining us on the line is Brandon Weatherby, who has been in Cleveland. He's been in Philadelphia, and he's done. He's like, get me out of here. I got to go. Hey, Brandon, how's it going?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm so grateful that we were able to talk to you. You did a different thing today. There was an RNC event at the DNC?
Yeah, so there's always counter-programming at all these events, and usually it's like in an office building or in the nearby convention center or something like that. But the GOP decided to do it in a current wrestling and boxing arena on the outskirts of town in South Philadelphia, formerly home to ECW. ECW is Extreme Championship Wrestling.
Okay.
They were a competitor of WWF and WCW in the 90s, and then they got absorbed by the WWE once the WWF changed to WWE. Anyways, they were known as the more brutal and bloody wrestling faction. So the entire connotation with them is just this very blue-collar, hardcore, very ugly type of wrestling. People that actually listen to your show might know it as the home of the movie The Wrestler. A lot of the scenes from Mickey Rourke's film The Wrestler were shot there. And that's where the GOP decided to have their counter programming.
Okay. Did the DNC have counter programming at the RNC last week?
Yes, they did. But those were in an office building, and it was really boring, and it didn't, like, no one cared.
People weren't dressed in singlets?
No.
Aw.
That being said, I have an immense respect for every single wrestler, and I do not have the same respect for every single politician. So.
That's fair enough. And while Jan Schakowsky's on hold, she's like, wait, oh, and Senator Dan Katowski.
What did you just say? Every single one of those wrestlers, you got mad respect for them?
Absolutely. It's a bipartisan issue. I think we should all have respect for wrestlers. They put their lives on the line for us, and they make the world a better place. And that's not sarcasm or humor. I am completely sincere right now.
It's funny because I didn't grow up on wrestling, and I know that it's something that you are passionate about and do such great work covering. So would I see Rudy Giuliani at this event in Philly?
Yes. Okay. So, yes, he was. I think what we're going to take away from this convention as a whole is what President Obama said last night, that Trump isn't necessarily Republican and he's definitely not a conservative. And I would say that as well about Rudy Giuliani. After seeing Rudy Giuliani speak last week on stage at Cleveland and then seeing him up close and personal today in Philadelphia, I don't think he has a political party. I think it's the man grasping at straws for relevancy, and that's not necessarily a good thing. I don't think most Republicans feel the same way he does. I think he definitely views the world in a very harsh tone. And every once in a while, there are some semblances of reality. When asked about 9/11 and the response team out of New York and what Senator Schumer did and what Senator Clinton did, he had great things to say. Every other question, it seems like the world's going to burn tomorrow. That's not reality.
No.
So I think that there's a handful of these people that were very prominent maybe in the 90s and maybe in the early aughts, and now it's just that's it. And a lot of actually good Republicans are trying to do good work, and they're these crazy people just in the way. Another person on the panel was a former Secret Service agent, and his main complaint was that the liberal media didn't do a good job at selling his book. I mean, I'm part of the liberal media. Everyone there is part of the liberal media. He defined all of the media as liberal. This is a bad idea. These are horrible optics. This is a venue that the Republicans chose to use to try to send a message to Democrats.
So bizarre.
We shouldn't use it in a dark wrestling arena in the middle of the day. This is at 1 o'clock in the afternoon. I go there. It's a beautiful day outside. The cab driver thought I was in the wrong part of town and I was lost. And we had to pull over to the side of the road to see, like, oh, no, this is actually it. This is where they want us to go. And we go, and I absorb all of this wonderful information. And I leave, and we're miles away from everything, and we just got a lecture about how the world's going to end tomorrow. This is not a good way to win an election. I don't know why they chose to do this in any way.
So bizarre. Well, Brandon, I know that you haven't been feeling well, and I want to thank you for joining us. And we want to see you when you come back. At least, well, let's talk to you and do a whole wrap up. I'm sure that you've got so much more to share.
Absolutely. And I really appreciate the time. I honestly do. This has been a very odd 2 weeks of my life, and I hope I never do it again, simply because I'd probably gain 10 pounds in 2 weeks. So.
Oh, man. Well, it's been an adventure, and following it with you has been a great time. So thank you so much for all of that. And we actually have Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky on the line, too, so she'll have some thoughts about what you were talking about as far as the optics in Philly. So thank you so much, and we're going to take the call from one second. Let me do this. Jan Schakowsky, hello, Congresswoman. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm just fine. Just took the train home from the from the arena, and I'm feeling happy, and it was a great night.
It was for me, growing up wondering if there ever would be a woman president of the United States. I didn't realize I was going to start crying as she walked down the stage. We have Senator Dan Katowski with us in studio as well. What were some of the highlights for you in her speech tonight?
Well, let me just say that I joined you in that. I think many tears were probably shed by, particularly by women. It really was quite a moment when she walked out. I thought it was a really exciting and progressive, she did what she absolutely had to do. What were some of the highlights? I liked that she thanked Bernie Sanders, and she said the platform, well, we wrote it together. Now let's do it together. Let's make it happen together. The idea of stronger together was, of course, a theme of the whole convention. The positive versus this dark negative. We are not afraid. We won't build a wall. That we have the most tolerant and generous young people in this country, and that when there are no ceilings, the sky's the limit. So I'm talking not only to women, but to men, that we can all just, fly. That Democrats are the party of working people. An important message, because Donald Trump has tried to portray himself of all of those disaffected people who are so disappointed that their wages haven't risen and that they haven't been as successful and that their children might do worse than they do. But really, that it's the Democratic Party and not the huckster and the con man who, in fact, hasn't paid his workers and hasn't paid his contractors. Also, just how tough she is in terms of you have to stand up to bullies. Both Chelsea and Hillary herself talked about how her mom, when she got bullied at school, wouldn't let her in the house and said, you have to stay outside and confront bullies. You know, I thought that was a little bit
We don't have cowards in this
mother.
House.
Yeah, we don't have cowards. Yeah.
Yeah.
No cowards. Yeah, I don't know. I was a little harsh, but you know, she feels strong and good about that.
You know, who she reminded me of Jan Schakowsky.
Really? Okay,
yeah,
I definitely.
Know how tough she is and how she's persisted and fought over the years to make such an impact on people's lives and lifted them up. And I thought, you know.
Some praise from Senator Dan Katowski.
Well, I think.
Thank you. But the one thing I love too is that, you know, if paid leave and affordable child care, if that's
right.
playing the woman's card, then the whole arena yelled out, deal me in.
Exactly.
Deal me in. Well, as a woman who has fought her way through politics and is still predominantly a man's world, do you happen to know what the representation is? I'm guessing you do, how the percentage of women in Congress right now?
Well, you know, we just broke through the 100 women mark in the House of Representatives. We're at 108 out of 435.
So a little bit about a
quarter. So, you know, we're not, you know, we're barely at 20%. And that's what it is in the Senate. Not nearly enough. But, you know, we're
I like how you're like. Well, you know, like we're working on it. Well, how do you respond when you hear people criticizing the way Hillary Clinton speaks? Because for me, I'm a comic, and I work in a predominantly male industry as well. And people will say things like they just don't like the sound of a woman's voice. And I don't know how much you've had to deal with that throughout your career. What are your thoughts?
You know what? They're going to have to get over it, because I really do think that. I feel pretty good about if we do what we have to do, that Hillary's going to win, and they're going to have to get used to it. Oh, come on. Let's listen to Michael Bloomberg. What do you think about his voice? I loved what he said, but it's a slightly annoying sort of, you know. Come on!
I know. I didn't hear. I didn't see any tweets about it. You always see people tweeting out about her voice. Why is she yelling at me? Maybe I don't know. Is it a mom complex? Because it's not just men that say it. It is men and women that complain.
Yeah, I got to tell you, you snap to attention when you hear it.
When you hear it,
and you're ready to move. You're ready to go. I mean, today she was. I thought she was so comfortable today. I thought this was probably one of her.
Yeah.
Best speeches I've ever heard her give. When she, when I was talking to Patty earlier, when she accepted the nomination, and she just, there was just a change that I think it was a perceptible change came over. She was like, okay, I'm ready to go. And the way she handled herself was just, I thought it was one of the best speeches I've seen her give.
I think it probably is her best speech. She needed it to be as well, but she was very comfortable tonight. She wasn't guarded. I think she felt good about her speech, and she just delivered it with such confidence and a lot of smiling. And you know, she was great. I felt really good. She talked about Trump's speech. You know, did you hear that? He spoke for some 70 odd minutes.
Yeah, right.
And I mean, odd.
Yes, that was as a comedian. I appreciated that. That was a good line.
I mean, the timing on that. She did it really well. Yeah.
She also mentioned that, that it's not right that there are Americans who feel left behind. What do Democrats have to do? What do Democrats have to do to get the message across that they are willing to fight for them and they have been fighting for them? Because that seems to be what people don't latch onto when it comes to Hillary Clinton. There's so much more of the, you know, that she can't be trusted, that, you know, there's so many things that she's to blame for. And yet somehow all the things that she's done for over 40 years are not taken into account.
Well, you definitely got the message tonight about the consistency of her commitment to public service, especially to families and women and girls. And that is a theme that we're going to have to keep going. I mean, Donald Trump has been all over the place. So, you know, the idea that he somehow has now emerged as a person that is actually going to change his stripes. Oh, that was the other thing she said, that Trump, what was something about Trump? This is what we got, or this is the way he's not going to change. This is the way he is. She said it in a humorous way. You know, kind of what you see is what you get, and it's not going to be any different. And when Bloomberg said, I'm from New York. We're from New York. We know a con man when we see one.
Right.
I think that's going to be kind of the contrast, that the genuine, the legitimate, the real person is Hillary. And the guy who is going to, say whatever he needs to say, as he has his whole life, in order for himself. Oh, the other thing they hammered home on, which I think was good, and I am the only one who can do this, alone. Yeah. And he knows more about ISIS than the generals. I thought that was pretty cool, having all the admirals and generals come out. And
she said, you don't,
Hillary.
Right? One simple sentence, you don't. But how about like...
Donald, you don't.
But one of the things that is, as you've always been someone who's advocated for hardworking people and working families and middle class. And when she did that, what I thought was her most effective criticism of, instead of like talking about making America great again, why don't you start by making things in America? And when she
that
talked,
was a good one.
I thought that was, well, she's look, I had had a tie that was given to me, and it was a Trump tie a couple of years ago. And it said made in China. And so she was able to just kind of take people through this. I mean,
why don't you make it in Colorado? Why don't you make your picture frames in Wisconsin? I don't have this committed to memory at all.
No. You obviously went to the U of I.
No, I really think that message hasn't been clear. This convention clearly made that message. They had all kinds of people who had really been hurt by things that Trump had done. One of the nights, not tonight, a woman who got the courage up. She said that it was very embarrassing, but it was the widow of a veteran who spent $36,000 at Trump University and was totally just scammed and ripped off. Talking about that and. You know, so there were real live people in their own words talking about how he has really damaged their lives. I think the Democrats made the case over 4 days.
Well, as this season continues, we would love to have you join us again, whether by phone or in studio. Senator Katowski is here every Thursday night. If you want to come hang out with us, that would
and
be
I usually
a
talk
pleasure.
About you for a good half hour every Thursday.
I would love to do that. You know, and you talk about me.
Okay, of course. Why are you so surprised?
I don't know.
It's been a pleasure.
It's all good stuff.
It's been a pleasure. This has been Congressman.
Can I ask you a question? What was he talking about? That the Trump people were there in some sort of a wrestling match.
Yeah, the RNC hosted an event where it was basically this sort of it was counter programming by the RNC, and it was a wrestling in a warehouse. It was very dark, and the liberal media. It's basically an attack against the liberal media, I guess. And
I thought I had gotten on with ESPN or something.
We've been trying to get all this. Stories from Philly, all the sort of side programming and the protesting and to see what was going on there. So we thank you so much for holding on the line, because Brandon Weatherby has put in some time, as has Congresswoman Jan Schakowsky of the 9th District of Illinois. Safe travels, and we will welcome you in studio. I'll have like food if you want next time. We'll have some Lou Malnati's for you. Scott and Senator Katowski and Representative Feigenholz, why doesn't Donald Trump's temperament make his followers pause? Why do they just seem to lock down harder in their support?
Because I think they're as angry and he expresses an anger. It's not rational. Anger rarely is.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And so, but he still speaks to that. And I think that's where the appeal is. I listen, Representative, I'm with you. I've been a Republican since for a long time, well, since birth, pretty much. And I cannot get this. And I can't. This Republican Party, many people, many friends of mine, many have said, you know, I didn't leave the party. The party left me. And that's how I'm feeling now, is that they have an insaniac. I thought that the points of Hillary's speech, Senator Katowski and I were talking about this off the air, but, you know, and Dan said that you were a little nervous about the negative, going negative, going again. And, you know, I was talking about this all day. Should she have even mentioned him in her speech? And quite the contrary, she did a lot. And I think it was really, really effective, because it was like talking to a petulant child, which, of course, is what he is. Mm-hmm. And so when he said, I think one of the quotes that really I thought she, and it was one of the good moments for her, is because she lowered her voice. And she talked about saying, Donald Trump says he knows more than generals. He goes, "No, Donald, you don't." Yeah. It was so,
right.
It was delivered beautifully. And I think effectively. I mean, the question you have to ask is outside of the hall, outside of true believers, did she seal the deal? And
win over any hostile or even cynical? Hold on, I think Representative Feigenholt said something. Go ahead, Representative Sarah.
No, go ahead. I'm listening. Keep going.
Okay.
I want to hear. No, Mr. Santis and I talked about this last time I was on your show, and I think that. Yesterday, there are a lot of Democrats who are not just partisan. I have for all the years I've been in the General Assembly, rolled my sleeves up to get the yes and get things done with my Republican colleagues. I have never, ever known anyone. I've never worked in an environment, a hostile environment, with a person who has the character of a Donald Trump.
No, well, I have, and those are jobs I usually quit. So.
Scott's point, that's really important to not lose is that, and I thought she did an excellent job. We talked about this last week on the show, is that she needed to do a better, more effective job of connecting with that that anger and that that people feel disaffected and people who feel like they left behind. And she put it out there. And she said, I know there's people out there watching this right now who are feeling that way, who are frustrated and angry, and you feel like you've been left behind. And just acknowledging and respecting that. Because I think one of the things why Donald Trump, if he is resonating with people, one of the reasons why he resonates with some people is because he reflects that anger. He mirrors it back. But what she did tonight, I think, was really important. She's like, I get it. I know what you're going through. I respect it. But here's what I'm going to do to help to lift you out of it. And I thought it was a real effective thing. I've talked about this for weeks. And as someone who represented a district that was considered to be a swing district, And Representative Feigenholtz is well aware of this palpable frustration that constituents have with government and with people who don't get it and who are not responsive. And I think she did that. She did the job she needed to do tonight on that front. And I'm hopeful, as someone who supports her, that that's going to resonate.
You know, it was interesting. Even David Axelrod, which this was a weird moment during the postmortem, said he didn't think it was a great speech. I think parts of it were great. I think parts of it were not. It was uneven. Watching it on television, being in the hall would probably be a very different experience. But watching on television, did she convince people? I mean, this is someone who has close to 60% negatives, just like Donald Trump does. That's what makes these two candidates unique in our history. Did she change minds?
Right. And that will be, I guess we'll find out a little bit with
We'll know that in a few days.
Did she change the way some people felt about her?
A little bit.
Right.
I have
That's
to say,
the point.
Right, because you're somebody who is cynical about.
I don't care. And like you, her authenticity. I thought there were moments of authenticity there that I thought were broke through.
For me, and Representative Feigenholtz, we don't want to leave you out of the conversation. I saw her speak at the Pickwick in Park Ridge, and it was the most It was wonderful to hear her speak for the first time in person. So I would attest to that. Being in the room is a significant difference. Can you hold on the line, Representative Sarah? Because we have a listener who wants to join the conversation, and I have to take a quick break. Do you mind?
I'm good.
Thank you very much. We're talking to Representative Sarah Feigenholtz, and we do invite you to join the conversation anytime. KJ, you hold on the line, and we will take your call right after this on 720 WGN. You are listening pretty late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. Joining us on the line is Representative Sarah Feigenholtz. In studio, we have Senator Dan Katowski and cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune, the political cartoonist for the Chicago Tribune, Scott Stantis. And we've been talking about the conventions last week, Republican National Convention. We were talking actually off the air about the numbers and whether or not viewers, how they're taking in the information. KJ wanted to join us as well. Hi, KJ. How are you doing?
I'm fine. I'm conventioned out, let me tell you.
I was talking about it, watching it, all of it.
Well, no, because I am a certain party, but I don't vote for the party. I've split my ticket many times. I vote for the person.
Okay.
And I've been involved in a lot of things. I've seen because of things that have happened with certain things in my life to take care of. I have seen senators. I visit them, I've been there and I've been involved in some very, I've been involved with some work that needs to be done.
Okay.
Because we're called the Bermuda Triangle where I live, because we flood. And,
you can explain? Where are you?
I'm in unincorporated Cook County.
Okay.
And I'm near Des Plaines, so
yeah.
and I've been involved with it, and I got involved with it because my condo, because I'm concerned.
Okay, and so what is your sense of the candidates this year? How do they differ for you? What's more important for you this year?
Well, I as I was saying to your producer, I was saying the one thing they haven't talked about, seniors. Neither candidate has talked about us.
Interesting.
This is going to be another year, I understand, that we don't have our Social Security raised. So why don't they talk about people like us? We're not the dying, we're not on the road to go out the door. I mean, my sister's still working, and she's a little older than I am.
And hey, we all aspire to be seniors.
I believe in the speech that Secretary Clinton talked about expanding Social Security.
Well, I probably missed it, but...
Well, that's expanding it, that's not...
What I heard was, and I've heard this from someone else, that we're not going to be, this is not going to be addressed, that we're not getting income for next year. So that means 2 years. And when Obama had it a couple years ago, we had the same thing. We didn't have it for 2 years. So, things go up. I live near a mall
sure.
that has 7 stores out. It's like dead when you go over there. I went to one store. I said, this is like a morgue. You go into Sears and there may be 2 people in there.
Well, Representative Feigenholtz, all the work that you do in Springfield, is it your sense that the political parties are both leaving the seniors behind?
Yes, I think that...
No, I'm asking... I'm sorry, oh, KJ. Sorry. I was asking Representative Sarah Feigenholtz. Yes, go ahead.
I'm just saying that because I got involved...
Do I not have
it,
Sarah on the line anymore?
Here, let's jump in here.
Yeah, go ahead, Sarah.
So, I'd like to, I think Senator Katowski just said that Hillary Clinton did speak about expanding Social Security, and I am certain that given her vision and where her morals align, that Social Security would be the last thing Hillary Clinton would ever think about cutting. I think her mother, Dorothy, would come back from the grave and beat her, spank her. But, I think the caller is discussing specifically that Social Security recipients are tied to this consumer price index or some formula that does or doesn't give them a cost of living adjustment every year. It depends on certain factors. And I believe for the last couple of years, it has not. Is that what you're talking about?
KJ, is that what you're talking about? Yep.
Yes, I knew that because one of the senators did tell me that. So I knew that it was on and had a factor of some sort, and that's why we weren't being raised. But, you know, the food still goes up. My assessment for the, you know, condo goes up. And I just want to give one thing that I, because I'm involved in as I said, in this the Bermuda Triangle, this flooding and everything. And I picked out a saying, quote from Henry Ford. And it says, coming together is the beginning. Keeping together is progress. Working together is success.
And it would seem to me as though that would be more the Hillary Clinton campaign than the message being given out by the Trump campaign.
Although I did hear one of the speeches last week was the VFW. And that speech was VFW took Donald Trump, his speech was very good, and he got a very, you know, resounding ovation. It was good. He laid out all the things that, you know, should be done for the VA. And we both know the VA, they've been, you know, they've mm-hmm. been kind of put to the side. So there are a lot of factors. I would like, you know, I'm not interested in words. Action speaks louder than words.
Okay. Right, but I mean, to address the idea that you haven't heard anything, I think you are also looking for words. I want to thank KJ for joining the conversation, but we do have to move along and let Sarah Feigenholz, Representative Feigenholz, who has a flight back in the morning, I want to let you carry on. Enjoy your evening. Are you going to celebrate some more, or are you done for the night?
Oh, no, I'm going to celebrate.
Go celebrate. Cheers. Cheers, Rep. Sarah.
You know what, Patty, you know better than that. And so does Dan.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Enjoy. Have one for me then. I treasure your time on the air with us and the conversations that we've had, and look forward to having you in studio again.
Have a great night, guys. I'll see you when I get back home.
Go
Excellent.
Cubs.
Go Cubs. More for this on 720 WGN.
And now it is once again time for a classic rendition of a famous scene on Pretty Late's Masterpiece Theater.
Ooh, it's time for What's That From? 312-981-7200. When you figure out what movie we were reading a scene from, we have joining us our thespians tonight, our Scott Stantis.
That's me.
That's you. Senator Dan Katowski. That's you. Doing stage direction is Esmeralda. Hi, Esmeralda.
Stage left.
And directing it is Craig Collins. He will let us know when we should commence. He'll yell action. 312-981-7200. Let us know when you have figured out.
Where do they win?
They win a gift card from Apt Electronics. You can go to aptelectronics.com and say hi to Steve Shapiro, our good friend out there, who gives us the hookup. What?
How about something from Kind of Second Dylan? I mean...
They're actually sponsoring the Teddy Roosevelt presentation with John Williams coming up. And
awesome.
I can tell, I'm going to see if I can find that. I
don't Bully.
Have it in front of me. Bully, exactly, with John Williams. Anyway, with King John.
Bully.
I have that in front of me. Thanks for asking.
Bully,
them.
Bully.
All right.
Craig, quiet on set. Quiet on set, actors, please, please.
Excellent. Thank you.
And action.
You're a real pistol. You're really funny. You're really funny.
What do you mean I'm funny?
It's funny. You know, it's a good story. It's funny. You're a funny guy.
Laughs.
What do you mean? You mean the way I talk? What?
It's just, you know, you're funny. It's funny. You know, the way you tell the story and everything.
It becomes quiet.
Funny how? What's funny about it?
Tommy, no, you're getting it all wrong.
Oh, Anthony, he's a big boy. He knows what he said. What did you say? Funny how?
Just.
What?
Just, you know. You're funny.
Oh, you mean, let me understand this, because, you know, maybe it's me. I'm a little messed up, maybe, but I'm funny how? I mean, funny like a clown? Am I funny like a clown? I amuse you? I make you laugh? I'm here to freaking amuse you? What do you mean funny? Funny how? How am I funny?
Just, you know, how you tell the story. What?
No, I don't know. You said it. How do I know? You said I'm funny. How the freak am I funny? What the freak is so funny about me? Tell me. Tell me what's funny.
Long pause.
Get the freak out of here, Tommy.
You mother stinker. I almost had him. I almost taught him. I almost had him. You stuttering jerk. You Frankie. Was he shaking? I wonder about you sometimes, Henry. You may fold under questioning.
Let's see There we go. Well done, everyone.
That was a great Pesci. That was a great Pesci.
Bravo. Oh, hey, wait a minute. Shh, you're giving it away.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah, maybe they don't know. Maybe they don't know. Chris, yeah, what is Chris? What is that from?
That was outstanding. That's Goodfellas.
Excellent job, Senator Katowski. Well done, Chris.
Well, actually, maybe it was just a Katowski. You just sound like Pesci.
A lot of more experience from Springfield.
Funny how.
Am I funny? Is my bill funny?
That was really, yeah, I'm glad you did.
You're not going to pass it? Yeah. Got some cement shoes for you. You've been wearing out in the river.
Oh, Chris, are you a big fan of Goodfellas?
Yeah, he had me at, what do I do? Am I your condo? Make you laugh? He had me at that. That was perfect.
I'm so glad you enjoyed it. And thank you again for playing. What's that from? You have a gift card from Apt Electronics. Go to aptelectronics.com for everybody else. But Chris can head out there and say hello to Steve Shapiro. Good night, Chris. Thank you.
All right,
Chris.
Thank you. Woo, Chris. Oh, man. I do. Goodfellas is an intense movie. Oh,
you think?
When he's trying to get rid of, he's calling his wife and telling her to get rid of everything. Yeah. And he's freaking out. And,
yeah.
Oh, you know what? That movie has a lot of sensory things, too. For whatever reason, whenever I cut butter, I always think of Goodfellas. Remember when they're in prison and he's slicing Sorvino. Isn't it Paul Sorvino?
Paul Sorvino, yeah.
He's slicing the butter like real thin. Garlic.
It's garlic.
Is it garlic? It's garlic.
Yeah.
That's what it is. It is garlic.
Where would we be without Esmeralda?
Because I can't do that. Do you ever try doing that with garlic? Where you slice them like just really thin, sheer slices of garlic?
It looks real sad. I try, but no. I can't do it because he was using a razor blade.
Yeah.
That's right.
We gotta get to a razor blade.
Yes.
It's garlic. She's right. It's garlic.
He's like a surgeon.
So when I cut butter, I'm just misremembering the movie. That's great.
You know what a great way to melt the garlic?
Put don't it let in, us stir the sauce.
Put it in a cup. Put it in a cup. I guess Melissa's cup and put it in a microwave. You can melt the garlic that way. It's unbelievable.
See, I can't handle a garlic.
Garlic.
That's so funny. It's like every time I chop almonds, I'm reminded of the sound of music. Remember that scene?
You know? Remember that? Why did I say butter?
Every
it makes no sense without
the butter. You know, every time I have waffles, I think of I think of the good and the bad and the ugly. Were there waffles in it?
That makes sense. I was hungry the whole time I was watching the movie.
That's right.
I don't know. See, I have to. I'm more of a garlic mincer than I am a slicer now.
Oh, you're a mincer.
I'm a mincer. Yes. I mince it. I mince it. And I chop.
You don't mince anything.
No, she doesn't. Really doesn't.
Do you have a garlic press, Esmeralda? What do you use?
No, because I find it to be a waste.
I agree. You end up with too much in that little thing.
Exactly. And then to clean it is a nightmare.
In the press.
You can't have too much garlic. What is wrong with you people?
No, we're saying that it gets stuck in the press.
Oh, yeah, okay. So you then lose some of the garlic.
Exactly.
Oh, well, that's a tragedy.
I remember
that
one time.
Liberal press.
I remember I was cooking something and Steve came to the kitchen. And he goes, my husband goes, I don't care how many onions and cloves of garlic it asks for. You have made this kitchen toxic.
Did he say that?
Not possible. That
I
is
agree.
Not possible.
Yeah, the smell of onions and garlic in butter. Best smell ever.
I'm so hungry right now.
Are you guys okay with, this is going to sound funny on the air, kissing someone, kissing your spouse after they've had a lot of garlic or your boyfriend?
My wife is Italian. This happens.
Does it happen a lot? Oh, yeah. I've always, I struggled a little bit.
Have I also had a lot of garlic?
Yes.
Are we mutually
Are you
garlic?
Both garlicked up?
Yeah.
No, one. It comes in and they're like, they're
reeking. We're kissing. We'll say, ooh, you taste like garlic.
Only mad because I'm like, what did you eat? And did not bring me any.
That's a good point.
That's interesting. Yeah. Interesting.
My husband almost ended our relationship because early on when we were dating, my mother made this amazing gazpacho that would make your eyes water from all the garlic and onions. And Steve said that it was coming out of my pores for days and he didn't want it. He said, do you notice that I didn't come around very often while your mom had that batch of gazpacho? He considered leaving me over gazpacho, garlic and onions.
Wow.
He was like, if her mother's always going to cook for her like this, I'm not sticking around.
I once broke up with a girl because she liked the TV show Hunter.
Really?
Yeah, I was like, how can you like that show? It's terrible.
Seriously.
This is serious. This was there must have been some other things, but yeah. I was like, I don't know.
That was your deal breaker?
Hunter?
Oh, you think there were other things?
Fred Dreyer? No, I don't like the show.
I love that.
What you're willing, because when I met my wife, she loved country, and I wasn't a big country fan, and I was like, oh, man, she's awesome, but this is kind of a deal breaker, right? Country music, but some people love it, and then I was like, I'm going to find country music that I love, right?
Have you heard any? Jody Messina is great.
I love Jody Messina.
I love Jody Messina.
Yes.
Yes. I'm all right.
Yeah. Emmylou Harris.
Mm-hmm. Dixie
right?
Chicks.
Lucinda Williams.
Loretta Lynn.
Yes.
Dolly Parton, all the women. All the chicks are really good. Morgan. Hank Williams. Huh? Willie Nelson.
Now you're going. You're going back.
I like bluegrass.
Bluegrass.
You can find it. If you, Mary Chapin Carpenter, I found a lot of country music and I love it. But Anne, we talked about, she didn't recognize like what a big like sacrifice it was for me to embrace country music. And it wasn't, you know, it just wasn't something I listened to a lot.
Well, it's, I mean, it's a little bit like politics. Tasting music, that's significant.
Yes. And if you're willing to sit down.
Could you have loved a Republican?
Of course I could have. I have a big
man. You broke up with someone over Hunter.
I have big man love for you. You're a Republican.
I believe America thrives when the middle class thrives. I believe our economy isn't working the way it should because our democracy isn't working the way it should. That's why we need to appoint Supreme Court justices who will get money out of politics and expand voting rights, not restrict them. And if necessary, we will pass a constitutional amendment to overturn Citizens United. American corporations that have gotten so much from our country should be just as patriotic in return. Many of them are, but too many aren't. It's wrong to take tax breaks with one hand and give out pink slips with the other.
Ooh, I wonder if that's the you're fired also alluding to that. That's Hillary Clinton tonight as she accepted the nomination of the Democratic Party as their presidential candidate. And Scott Santis is in the studio, the cartoonist for Chicago Tribune. Is your cartoon for tomorrow going to be Hillary?
You should have it.
I should have
it. I sent it out at 3:30 this afternoon.
She didn't do the speech yet.
Well, I know, but I just know. I know who the candidates are. We know who the candidate will be. So,
Gotcha.
And I got to draw. I got to draw Kane, and I got to draw Pence.
Okay.
Pence is just like this nub. I just draw this with a little.
I think that's a good way to describe a VP candidate.
He's a nub of a man.
Does that sound dirty?
It does sound like something Trump would say. He's a nub.
He's such a nub.
You're nubbing to me. I don't know what that means. Chandler Bing had a nubbin, right?
A nubbin?
Yeah, that was his third nipple on his show, right?
That's right. It was called a nubbin.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We believe you.
Sorry.
That sounds right.
I'm watching a lot of Friends with my kids, like the reruns, which is very, talk about revealing parent of the year. But my 6-year-old loves the show Friends.
It's a fun show.
Your 6-year-old?
My 16-year-old.
Oh, 16. I thought you said six.
I'm going, no.
God,
thank you.
Your parent skills do suck.
Good Lord, such a terrible parent. No, 16.
Okay. I think it's a fun show. That's a fun show to watch.
Yeah, it was
a fun
well show. Written. It was one of the top comedies of all time.
Do your kids like Seinfeld too?
Not as much.
More of the intellect of a 16-year-old, Craig, is what we're saying right now. I'm not a big fan of Seinfelds. I'm a big fan of Friends.
Oh, I didn't say I wasn't a big fan of Seinfelds.
I'm judging myself.
Why would you judge yourself?
Because I've been criticized for not liking Seinfeld but preferring Friends.
Oh, really?
Really?
Oh, Uncle Sam is very upset with his choices.
Yes.
Head to head?
Head to head Seinfeld Friends or Seinfeld?
Seinfeld Friends.
Friends. Head to head. Scott, did you watch either one?
I watched Seinfeld.
Okay, yeah. There you go.
Yeah,
yeah.
I would definitely say. Cheers. No, I was.
Oh,
no.
You are such a good politician.
Okay, I'm kidding. Cheers or Frasier?
I would go Seinfeld over because I was so consumed with Seinfeld. I would I can quote things from Seinfeld.
Well, then you're Seinfeld.
Yeah, definitely.
Cheers or Frasier?
Oh, Cheers.
Yeah, because really? Cheers was the precursor, was the foundation.
Mm-hmm. I know, but Frasier is so brilliant.
It was the continuation. Frasier was an awesome show. Awesome show. Loved it.
Pence, he doesn't look like a numb. He looks like Uncle Sam's thumb.
Did you say numb or nub?
Nub. Sorry, nub.
You just said numb.
Numb.
No, the thumb is coming out to the right. It's going
it
to
is.
Where
I
it's supposed
it.
To be.
I see it, but yeah. Well, it's because Trump is so a little portly in this.
He is. I mean, for a guy who makes fun of how fat, you know, women who are overweight, this guy is 60 pounds overweight. Shut up.
So it's okay to be huge
when
you
big.
Have billions. Huge.
Sure.
So what did you think of the speech tonight, Scott?
I thought I thought she had a hell of an assignment, frankly, and a very high bar. First off, Dan and I were talking off the air that, you know, she's following the A-team, some of the best orators in the country, maybe in the last 50 years.
Yes.
And so that, but not just that, but they were laying the table as for to humanize her because they need to do that. And so tonight, I think it was largely successful, but there were some rough patches that weren't successful. And when she was quiet, I thought, frankly, the times when she when she took Trump to task were very effective because she took the tone down and did it very conversationally. Everyone who's met her said in small groups and intimately, she's terrific. I've had friends who've sat in the room with her and say, and I, when she had those moments, she was really good. And I mean, you know, the question was, could she seal the deal? Could she change minds with tonight's speech? And I compare it to 1988, two conventions.
Ugh.
George Bush, George H.W. Bush, who actually was shrill, many of the same words they used to describe Hillary, you know, terrible comment, all that stuff. And he came into his convention, you know, build up. You had Ronald Reagan saying, you know, well, do me one more favor, win one more for the Gipper.
Mm-hmm.
And the place goes nuts. And you know, he had a good build up.
That was a good Ronald Reagan. I was there.
I'm going to go win one for the Gipper.
Yeah.
But George H.W. Bush gave the 1,000 Points of Light speech, which was wonderfully written, and he delivered it really well. It's
Peggy Noonan.
Oh, yeah. Peggy is amazing. Yeah. So, you know, go to the Democratic convention in Atlanta. He had an amazing buildup. You know, Jesse Jackson, Mario Cuomo, Olivia Dukakis, I think, introduced him. And Michael Dukakis comes on stage and just pops that balloon and sucks all the air out of it. And so that was the tale. And that was kind of the two things that could have happened to Hillary tonight.
Right.
I don't think either one happened. I think it's somewhere in the middle, but I think mostly positive.
I would say, I mean, it wasn't a Barack Obama speech at the last, you know, his first acceptance of the nomination.
Oh, that was amazing.
And I mean, but not many people are going to be that great. You know, Tim Kaine was flat, I thought, last night. Joe Biden gave the best speech I've ever seen him give.
Well, he's fun, you know, he just is.
We shouldn't lead by the example of our power, but by the power of our example, yeah. I think. They're the kinds of things you go, wow.
I've seen him speak at a union hall here in Chicago.
Yeah. Oh, that must have been something.
And it was just unbelievable. Came in, his shirt sleeve was rolled up, and let me tell you something, folks. And he kept on doing that time and time again, and he just drew in. But to the point about Hillary and what Secretary Clinton did today was, I think, she did something that I think was a challenge for her, and she made a big speech intimate. In many places.
In the first part of it, I thought it was long.
Yes.
It was too long. But the first part of it, frankly, the part that America was going to watch was the first 10 minutes of it. It was really good. And her delivery was, and you could tell she'd get worked up and her voice would get high again.
Right.
And then she'd rein herself back in. And that's when she's really good. And, you know, that's her strength. She has a lot of negatives. Obviously, and that's what she had to fight against tonight. And you know, you're not going to get rid of all of them in one fell swoop. I think this helped a lot. I do. I'd say that the next 48 hours is when we're going to find out if it actually worked. And I think there's going to be a pretty good bump from this. I suspect it worked.
We're also hearing from our texters. I think we have time to do this. There's one texter from the 949 wants to know if we can explain or discuss Citizens United, which was something that the Supreme Court said. Was that a sigh or a growl?
No, it's a growl.
Would you like to explain to the 949?
And I like freedom. And I think but the Citizens United effectively legalized unrestrained money spent by corporations and donated into
corporations are people.
Yes.
that was very good. Thank you. Yeah,
and it's preposterous. Yeah. I'm sorry. This is where I do differ greatly from my libertarian conservative friends.
I struggled with this when, you know, things like with Hobby Lobby, and I was like, but when are people people? when they're fighting for things, you know, when the corporation is a person and their religious freedoms and are being protected, then what about the people who are people not being having access, being able to have access.
Is this a conundrum wrapped around?
people.
Are you trying to confuse me?
People.
Yes, the people are people.
People who are people.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the Citizens United after the break, if you guys don't mind. And I also have from the 224, there are people on Facebook having conversations tonight. One friend for the 224 said that tonight made a difference and he will vote for her. Others are saying they feel better now about voting. They feel better about voting for her now.
I think that's a huge part of it. That's a huge success of this speech.
And do you think that Donald Trump made people feel better if they were already kind of in his camp?
I don't know what people were watching. I'm sorry. I know you have to break. I'm flailing now. Because flailing. This is like...
You have to see this, everybody.
Somebody... I don't know what they were watching, but after the convention, I thought, this, what a train wreck. 53 to 57%, depending on the poll, were more likely to vote for him after that convention.
Yeah, I don't know either.
Yes, you do. You're the only person who does, Patty.
Who understands these things?
You're the only person who gets it right.
You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio. And Scott Santis, the cartoonist of Chicago Tribune, has gone from flailing to drumming. And I kind of like the air drumming. I think it lends itself to that. Senator Dan Katowski also joins us in studio. We were talking about Citizens United before the news. And it does have, you know, and when President Obama gave, was it his first State of the Union address when he pretty much was chastising the Supreme Court for having passed that, which was uncomfortable. And then they also, after that, started not showing up after that. Like Scalia didn't come to the State of the Union addresses and in the last few years. Yeah, it got uncomfortable.
You know, I was looking at this. I think this is pretty interesting when, because I have nothing better to do between 12 and 2 in the morning, I was watching old speeches of President Obama and how people were reacting to him in Congress. And remember the guy who yelled out, "You lied!
Liar! You lied!"
Things that you have never seen.
Maybe the guy just liked Princess Bride. Remember? But liar!
This is all, yes, liar!
He said, "True love!" Sorry.
But there is this whole, you know, questioning, right? And this public questioning or this public attempt to tear people down, these sort of standards that were never violated before. And over the course of the past, since the president was elected, people disagree with him, and they disagree with him in a different way than I think they ever have with any other president. And I suffice to say, it was not really that respectful.
No.
And I think this whole birther movement, or this, whether he was a legitimate president or not, and I just think it gave people what they thought was a license to react in that way. And so, how dare the president question? But look. The president of the United States is entitled to question things and make those kinds of statements. And the thing is, people would never I wouldn't say never, but for the most part would realize there's certain things that you continue on the we're statesmen, right? We go and give a speech before Congress, we're there. I may disagree with them and I'm going to show my displeasure by not applauding. But I'm not going to.
Would you
yell
cough? Would you kind of sort of go, BS! Like that? Would you, like you're sneezing? But like,
I
suck!
I can say that I was not a huge fan of Governor Blagojevich. I didn't vote for him when I was as a Democrat. I broke with my party. And when he spoke, I mean, he was a terrific speaker, but I never said anything because he was the governor of the state. And ultimately, you know, we handled it in the appropriate way, I thought.
And so did the legal system.
Yes. But I just think it's just a kind of this interesting dynamic that occurs and what's happened with, right?
I think something systemic has changed. You touched on it. And I think it's almost as simple as this, is before you and I, and we do, we especially off the air, we get pretty heated, but we disagree on stuff. But what's different between others and in this culture we're in now is I can't just question your politics. I question your motives. And that's just goes to a place that I don't know what you're thinking. You don't know what I'm thinking, but the dynamic now, the discussion now is, I know exactly what you're thinking.
Right.
Yeah. I know exactly that you hate America and you want the terrorists to win. Well, no, and we take these leaps on both sides of just how, and it's demonizing, and it's that whole idea that Trump has taken to another level, but the idea of the other, You know, those are liberals, and liberals are terrible, awful people. Those are conservatives, and they're just terrible, awful people.
Exactly.
And that's what drives me away from someone like Donald Trump, is definitely that divisiveness, that always blaming somebody else and using the kind of language that he does. I liked John McCain the first time he ran in 2000 when he was running against Al Gore. Like, that was someone, when I was looking at those primaries, John McCain, I was the candidacy I was following until the push-pulling in South Carolina, where they were calling and asking people, you know, if John McCain had a child out of wedlock with a woman who was black. Do you remember that?
Yeah, sure. Right.
And that was one of the things that drove his campaign under, was that kind of racial targeting and making, you know, kind of calling it a question. Oh, wait a minute. Is he? Oh, he was on stage with this girl.
Oh, did you hear Trump today, by the way? Did you hear this one?
Which one?
Today he was talking about, he had a press conference. I'm doing the air quotes, which are always effective on the air.
WGNradio.com. You can watch the air quotes live stream.
And they asked him about the convention. He says, there's a lot of them I think should have been punched in the face.
Exactly.
I'm like, this is presidential? Really? If you're sitting there right now and you're for Trump, this is your guy?
Mm-hmm.
Really? And I thought Hillary's line about a guy who gets upset about a tweet.
If you can bait a man with a tweet, you cannot trust that man with a nuclear weapon.
Right. Great line. Very good line.
But when does it come? When do you get to the point where you kind of, like with children, do you say, you know what? We're not going to give this the airspace that it deserves, right? Or that doesn't deserve. Like when your kids are really not behaving, you're like, nah, I'm done listening to you, right? Or you're the kid in the classroom who's completely disrupting the entire class, and he or she are getting a lot of attention.
You remove them.
Yeah, remove. And the point is, I think every day the beast is fed. You know, I'm gonna continue to shock. I'm gonna continue to say things even more and more responsible until somebody, like, and this is why I was so serious last week, where somebody says that that the candidate for president should be taken out and shot, right? And I'm thinking, wouldn't there be a very swift movement to make sure that person was investigated and quite potentially prosecuted?
Well, look at Gabby Gifford,
very serious stuff, because when people say, and I say this, words matter. I had a town hall meeting, and the gun lobby put out a communication saying, I was having a town hall meeting on the budget, and the gun lobby put out a mailing that says I was having a gun control recruitment meeting.
Well, they know what you meant.
Yeah.
We all know budget is buzzword.
Exactly. Yes. Right. And it was like, and it was scary, you know. And I walked in there, and I was like, well, what's going to happen? And it ended up being productive. But when people do that, when they say, they spread lies and misinformation, there are people out there who are vulnerable and they believe this stuff.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, and then I got a chance to hear me, like, oh, you really don't believe what these people are saying?
But do they believe when the opposite is told to them? When someone's accused of something, and in fact, Donald Trump said that she wants to take away, Hillary Clinton wants to take away your Second Amendment right. Do they listen when she says, I will not, I do not want to take your guns. I want to make sure that you are not shot by someone who should not have had the gun in the first place.
That comes back to my hypothesis that we know what she really means. We know her motives. And tonight she said, I'm not going to take away your guns.
What other ways that sounds clear cut to me.
I don't know how else you can say that.
If you question the legitimacy of the press, right? If the press is illegitimate and the press has a liberal bias, everything that's said about your candidate, right? Everything that's said about your candidate is incorrect if it comes from the quote unquote liberal media.
Right.
Right. And everything that's said about the other person that comes from
the not liberal media
is absolutely accurate. Mm-hmm. And this is what's so interesting to me. And like, it's frames and facts. And it, like, the certain facts are not penetrating the frame it's not going to get through the noise there.
That's a good point, because I've mentioned this earlier. There are people who, you know, accuse me of bias. Yeah. I'm not a journalist. I'm a talk show host, so I have an opinion, but I try to go in reflection of what has been said. So when, again, I go all the way back to the very first day when Donald Trump announced his candidacy, and he says that Mexico just sends their, you know, their rapists, their people with problems, and their drug dealers, and then he goes on to mock a reporter with a disability. These are things that are going to shape my opinion in a negative way, and I'm going to tell you this is not a person I think should run our country. I don't believe that. And on the other hand, you know, when it comes to Hillary Clinton and people say that, well, she, you know, she can't be trusted and she's a liar. Investigation after investigation has not borne anything out where she should be prosecuted. Are we now to say that the FBI is incompetent, that all the committees that have gone after her are also incompetent? Well, then you go after those people and not the person who has yet to be prosecuted, has yet to be charged.
Well, there's
with
the difference between being prosecuted, being indicted, and not being able
time
to tell the truth.
Time and time and time again.
Right. Well, and the both reports, Benghazi report, the email report, both said that she lied. So, I mean, she does have place.
Like, you mean about the video, that it was because of the video? That's the lie.
Yes, of course.
Are there other lies other than that? Because the CIA was giving her that information, and she decided to go with information. The CIA gave her information that it was
according
because of the video, and there were attacks in other places
because
of the video.
No, according to the Benghazi report, they ginned that story up in the White House, and that was the cover story.
The CIA gave her reports, and they gave her conflicting reports, depending on the information they were getting. And there were other attacks in other parts of the world that were inspired and influenced by the video. And that has been reported. That's been reported. So I'm just curious. So did the Benghazi report say she lied because, or did they say that she changed her story? Because if she lied, then why aren't there charges?
Because you can lie. There's nothing against the law about lying.
I think that there probably is.
No, of course there isn't. A politician lying? Good Lord, they'd all be in jail. Except for Dan.
So lying to the media, was it lying to control the story? Was it lying?
Yeah.
She said, I lied. Did she ever say, I lied?
No, but she the records are that she pushed the story that they knew to be untrue about the video. And she they know she lied because that night she texted Chelsea to tell them what actually happened there. In addition, it was also the foreign minister of Egypt, which is weird. Yeah, I know. Those are the two people she talked to that night.
So here's the thing is, like, I don't think we've ever had a person, a figure in her role that's ever been more scrutinized than anybody. And I think it's really rather unbelievable. And I think at times I will say that Secretary Clinton hasn't done herself any favors, because I think she's very guarded about this stuff. And in many cases could just be like, you know what? What's the answer, right? The answer is I should have done it differently and should have just stuck with it and to not, like, when I, as a candidate, oftentimes people go and they kind of elaborate, and the more they elaborate, the worse it sounds.
Well,
I get it. I think it's important. This is, you know, what's so key about what we're going through right now. There is such a thing that people on all political spectrums will say, there's such a thing as due process, right? And there's such a thing as a trial. And there's such a thing of basically having your rights to be, you know, to go through through all the systems that we have in place to determine whether some is innocent or guilty. The fact is, this woman who's the candidate for a president has been tried in the media for decades on so many separate charges and has never been found to be guilty of anything, you know, of like a crime that that's been determined to be. But that's what's so key about this. And I'm like, okay, I get it. She's flawed and she's made some mistakes in her career. And I think she's owned up to it. But the fact remains is that I think in the course of the past several months, there has been so much time and effort that has been spent to tear her down. There are challenges within this country that exist. And this is something you and I have talked about before, Scott. I think there are certain people in some parties in our country who are so good at using the legislative apparatus to achieve a political goal. They're so good at it, right? And they're relentless and they keep going after it. They're dogged like it and they're so determined. And meanwhile, we're like, well, what's really mattering to people, right? I mean, what are people looking at? And that's why I think there's a group of people that feel completely disaffected. They feel like they're not addressing their concerns, because meanwhile, Congress is spending all of its time and effort on issues like this, right? And they're getting engaged in a political race when in fact they couldn't get the guilty verdict that they wanted to achieve, but they're still going to pursue it. And they're not going to relent.
Right. But there is a history of playing fast and loose with the truth. And that and a lot of times you touched on it. There's times when she just doesn't do herself any favors. I mean, it's just like you know, the biography after they left office, we were, you know, we weren't just poor, we were broke. And I'm just like, oh my God, you had $15 million contracts waiting for you. If that's broke, then move. That's not bad. We were shot at in Bosnia. We were, you know, she was named after Edmund Hillary, which was interesting. She was born, 12 years before he actually climbed Mount Everest. And it's just like things like that.
You and I read the same article. I think I read that the other day because it was. I was going through this series of things, but you can go back to the beginning of her career when there's a famous conservative writer who called her a congenital liar. And that has stuck over time, and despite the fact that so many things were disproven. But it was something that was laid out as a foundational argument against her. The fact remains is that she continues to do the work, continue to be involved in public service, continue to make a difference in people's lives. And I, you know, look, this is to me, it's in many cases, it's been a real desperate attempt to try and take her down.
And here's how far back we go. Hey, Andy, what did you want to tell us? Andy?
Hey, Patty.
Hey.
Yeah, you know, Hillary's never been convicted of anything, and neither was Bill. But one of the things that they did is in the first term, in about the first, maybe it was 6 months, they found over 860 FBI files of conservatives in the White House. And they marched everybody up, everybody in the White House, to the different committees, and everybody played that I don't see anything, I don't hear anything, I'm not going to say anything. And they had a tight ship. Nobody talked, okay? But G. Gordon Liddy, he went to jail for a year, and he went to jail for one thing, for looking at one FBI file. And so it's been, when people talk about the dishonesty that goes on there, it's for a reason. And by the way, I'm a conservative who will vote for Hillary only because Trump stinks. I don't trust him. I don't like what he does. He drives wedges between people. And because my sister passed away about 14 years ago, and she loved Hillary. So I'm going to vote for her just for her. But, if anybody who's going to try and resuscitate Hillary as far as her ability and her integrity, she's got ability, her integrity. She lacks integrity. She really does.
Okay. I think that's your opinion. I know that also is Scott's opinion that she lacks integrity. I think Senator Katowski and I.
Here's what's really interesting. So I think he was talking about the first
term.
Thank
you, Andy.
In Bill Clinton's in office.
Yeah.
As if she was the one in possession of these FBI files.
Well, no, but the Rose Law Firm files, up in her office.
But the point is the point is do you think she's the one who had access to these files? That was her call?
Did she break into the FBI and take them?
No. The Rose Law Firm files are different than the...
I'm asking about the FBI files. Why did the FBI give them to her?
I'd forgotten that story.
You just hopped and skipped to another thing. You're like, yeah, but Rose Law Firm.
Well, no, because I mentioned files.
FBI give them the files? I mean, I don't understand. I mean, why would the FBI, do they just leave him around and did she put on like a cat suit into the FBI and get the FBI files?
This
is
the White House. This is the West Wing that was involved in that.
Right.
Gee whiz, you have to call. You have the Googles in front of you.
I'm just asking, why would the FBI give her those files?
Because the White House. I don't think she had anything to do with that.
Well, then why do we even bring that in as to the 846 files? And you said, oh, I forgot about that, as though that somehow lent itself to her credibility.
Why did this on 720 WGN?
You are listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase Studio. I'm joined by Senator Dan Katowski and the cartoonist for Chicago Tribune, Scott Stantis. And we're having a very lively conversation about integrity and authenticity. And I think the authentic part that people talk about when it comes to Hillary Clinton. I've been wondering about this for the last few days. In general, I think that it's interesting when people say you don't sound authentic, as though basically saying is that you're saying something that doesn't feel like you're connecting with it. Is that what?
Yeah, I think it's her delivery.
It's her delivery.
It's real. It's real. And I think tonight, I think she basically addressed that. I thought that was a very authentic, a very real speech. And I think there was a moment.
Wish she had some water.
Here's what I want to say. There's two things I want to say. The opening speech, thought solid, statesmanlike, and then she accepts the nomination, and her body language visibly changes, and she is even more relaxed and comfortable in her own skin than I think I've ever seen her in public. I don't know if you agree with that, Scott.
Yeah, no, I do. I do.
It was like, I would say there's a tale of two speeches there.
Yeah.
There's a beginning speech, and all of a sudden, once she accepts the nomination, it's like the weight of the
yeah, but after that, there was parts where she got tensed up again, the voice rises, and then she reined herself back in. I thought the beginning of the speech was superb, and the end of the speech was great.
But you know, it's so interesting. And then parts of it, there are some. I heard you say the voice rising a couple times. I'll tell you, a senator that I served with, Deanna DiMuzio, she would say how hard it is to run as a woman. And she said, because I could never raise my voice the way a man could in a debate, because people would say, you know, there's that voice.
Oh, no. Well, like I said earlier, George H.W. Bush had the same issue. He has a highish voice. And when he would get mad, it would get higher.
Yeah.
And shrill. And words like shrill words like that were used to describe him as well.
So, but she did a good job of modulating that and then speaking in, I think, a calmer way.
I think a conversational way is versus what we usually hear from her and a lot of politicians.
And then real quick, so Joe Biden gives a speech and it's like boom, 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 boom. It stops at certain places, and he says, "Folks, you know," and he brings you in, but she had so many more moments of pulling back. And it's interesting, and people will say, you'll point out, and I heard you say that, like, there were times where she kind of get out there and her voice was high, and she really had several moments, and many more moments than Biden's speech, of pulling back. And I think that's her challenge as a candidate who's a woman.
Well, and what do you think it is? There are a lot of studies as to whether or not people are annoyed by the sound of a woman's voice, which makes my job so much fun. But there is that barrier to, you know, that resistance. I don't want a woman, you know, to be my president. I'm not ready for it. I think there is still a lot of that. But I do want to talk before we go to news, the inviting Russians to hack her emails. And he said, "I was being sarcastic." Again, I'm going to go to the temperament of the person who could hold the highest office, one of the most powerful position in the world. You want him to go, "No, I didn't mean push the button."
You can't never mind that statement.
Sorry, China.
Yeah.
You can't never mind it. It's one thing to do to say something like, "Oh, never mind. I was just sarcastic."
No.
You can't have a serious news conference. Never mind.
Never mind. No,
it didn't happen. It's just,
and he kept going with it. He kept saying, "And I hope Putin likes me." I think he does. And that was what he said at the end of that speech.
Yeah, no, it was this guy is the worst. Listen, there is an alternative. I'm going to start pushing him.
And
Gary Johnson. Gary Johnson's a libertarian candidate for president.
Okay,
Had the opportunity. I'm actually going to post a podcast interview with him tomorrow.
Why are you laughing?
Because I know this is going to allow Scott to sleep at night, which is great, because I'm all about Scott being able to.
No, but my
this is good, because you have an alternative.
Yeah.
And I'm happy for you that you have an alternative.
Well, he's getting 10% of the vote right now, or 12%. He's just a few points away from being in the debate.
He's just a few points away, as you say,
from being in the debates.
What? Right. They need to be at 15, correct?
Yeah.
Why 15%.
I'm not laughing.
He's tired. He works all day.
I'm happy for you that you have another candidate, because I think this would have been a rough patch for you.
Oh, I would not.
Oh, I see. That's what he means. Because he knows how much
you dislike.
I would
never endorse Donald Trump.
I know, but this would have been a rough patch for you if you didn't have an alternative.
Before we go to the news.
As your friend, I'm happy.
Because I promise we're moving on. We're going to talk about why you shouldn't get rid of your landline. But Mark wants to join the conversation. Yes, Mark?
Yeah, this is Marco. A friend messaged me tonight that she is aware of two sides of Trump. And this addresses your thing about authenticity, that there is the public buffoon, but she's also found him very intelligent in one-on-one interviews. Now, the question that I've got to raise is this. When it comes to foreign policy negotiations, are we going to get the Trump who acts like a buffoon, or are we going to get the Trump who is an intelligent negotiator? And are we going to find out too late that when it comes to the way he negotiates foreign policy, we're finding out too late that he's been a buffoon?
We're not finding anything out too late. We found it out the whole time he's been running.
And that he has offended people from other nations in a way that is irrevocable. I think that my vote is going to have to go to Hillary, just because I think Trump is an overgrown little boy. I think Hillary is, with all her flaws, more of an adult.
Mm-hmm. Marco, you got to give some thought to Gary Johnson. Would you shut up to Katowski? I'm serious. Not, go
see,
online.
He's trying to bully me. Don't let him bully me, America.
Go online. Ooh. Do your research. If you're a Republican,
thanks, Marco.
If you're a conservative, this is an alternative for you.
Mark thinks it's funny.
Mitt Romney might give his endorsement, by the way, to Johnson Wells.
Yes.
Considering it. You're listening Pretty Late. I'm your host, Patty Vasquez, live in the Allstate Showcase studio, finding out that my guests, while they may look like adults, are actually 12-year-old boys laughing about Johnsons.
Yeah. No! I said he was
Johnson.
Johnsonian.
Oh, Johnson.
I said that he's Johnsonian.
Do you still have a landline, Scott?
Yes, I do.
You do? So do I think. It doesn't work anymore. But
you know what? If I do radio phoners, I do it from home because I think I hear it better than...
Oh, we definitely prefer it.
On the cell phone. Now, why would that be? Is it just because I'm old and crotchety? Or
I think, well, it depends on the cell connection. You could always be in a bad cell, but a landline is always better for a phone. And I mean, you know that when you talk to anybody like in an office, it sounds better than on their cell phone, doesn't it? They're walking.
Yeah,
they get the
Why do you ask?
A lot more ambient noise.
Unless you have a phone near like a water fountain or something.
Here, call me. Let's right. Someone call on your cell phone and then calls back on your landline. Do you have a landline?
I don't know. I don't know if I want to share that on the air.
All right. Then. Well, here okay. Why do you keep a landline?
I guess it's one of to be honest with you, it's so we can get all our marketing calls just one number. You don't have to get it on our cell phone.
Okay.
And my wife will go on it and she'll like delete.
They package it with your internet, right? I mean that's the reason
we want to get rid that's of true. It. And we haven't taken the step.
Here's
hard
reasons,
breaking up with
here's
the
reasons that, here's reasons why you should not. Here's one these are unique reasons, ones you might not think of. What are some reasons you think you shouldn't in case like something goes wrong with your cell phone or it dies and you need to have a landline, although I don't know, like faxing. Anyone still fax? I do. I have to fax some. I know.
Do you really?
I fax. Scan. I have a scanner.
You know what, though? You can fax online now.
Yeah, thanks for the heads up. You can, right? It's a new development.
I can just do it online. I don't need the stupid landline.
You just copy it and it goes to your email. Did you know that?
She doesn't need that, old man.
That's right, yes.
You didn't know that, right?
I didn't know that, yes.
Do you have a big fax machine? How big is it?
It's about this big. It's about this. It's on top of my dresser.
Do you have like a...
on my dresser in my bedroom.
Matthew Broderick War Games computer to your house?
Want to play a game? I love that
Love
movie.
It. It's a great movie.
That's a really good DEF CON. That's what you learn about DEF CONs.
I know.
When I was a kid. I was like, ooh, DEF CON. We're at DEF CON 4. DEF CON.
It's a terrific movie.
It's a very good
movie. Broderick was a very impactful figure.
Ally Sheedy. She was excellent.
She was
Have
terrific.
You seen, do you know movie?
Of course.
Yeah, I'm just curious.
I was in the 80s. I was down with the, kids.
The fact that you had to say I was down with the
80s.
Makes us wonder
I was down
if
with
you
the kids.
I was down with the hip-hop 80s.
That thing,
you know,
flock of seagulls thing.
Yeah.
So here's 10 unique reasons that you should hear. And we talked a little bit about this last night with our guest, Brandon C. Price. There's some things you can't do with a cell phone that you could do with a landline, right? Which is one, hanging up on somebody, like really hanging, like just slamming that phone down. You don't say hang up. You just end the call, right?
Oh, yeah. And sometimes I hang up and I'm like, I'm sorry.
Right.
Like with the cell phone, there isn't the hang up and you can actually get out of hanging up on somebody by saying that you, oh, my God, we got disconnected. We didn't really want to talk to them.
No, when you had
a
landline.
They call back, they said, you hang up at me? Oh, no. We just got disconnected.
By the way, the trick to hanging up to somebody that you don't want to talk to anymore, hang up while you're talking. Right?
That's really good.
That's brilliant.
Great advice. She's really good.
Wow.
Yes.
That is.
We've learned so much. Remember, get her talking about cars. She's really good at this stuff.
Do you like hanging up on people? I haven't done it in a long time. There's a moment you go, I can't anymore. I'm out.
You're done.
Yeah. My husband would call back and be like, did you just hang up on me? Yes.
Yeah. It does.
Yeah.
It's effective at times.
It's definitive. It's immature, I know.
It never gets me what I want, though, if I ever, hang up with my wife. It doesn't get me what I want.
Or it takes a lot longer for you to get what you want.
Exactly. It's a double whammy. No, I don't get her to call back. Like, I just get the anger.
When you hang up on somebody, do you kind of hope they'll call you back to ask why you hung up?
Yeah. I do.
Oh yeah.
Oh.
Yeah, you do.
I hope if I like get an argument with my wife too, that she's going to want to know why I'm angry.
Yeah. And early in our relationship, Janine, my wife,
would want to find out.
No,
right?
She'd hang up on me, and I informed her that after the second time or third time, that's not the right thing to do.
Okay.
Wow, did you
use that tone of voice? Because I'd have been like,
that's not the right thing.
Well, I was 18, so that's more like, that's not the right thing to do.
You've been with your wife since you were 18 years old?
Yeah.
How many years married?
We're having 35, our 35th this October.
Esmeralda, awesome. I have a super personal question for him, but I'm really uncomfortable asking him.
Go ahead. Go ahead.
Was she your first?
No.
Okay.
What? What just happened here?
I just want to know if, like, maybe if he's ever been with,
his first
were
wife?
Were you her first?
His first
No.
Lady.
See, you don't know if you were her first?
Come on.
I said it was an ultra personal question.
We're doing fine. It's 1:40. We're doing fine. Everything was going great.
Yeah, see?
We're going great.
This is better than talking about Benghazi.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. So
there weren't a lot.
There weren't a lot.
No, let's just put that.
She was my second.
It wasn't like people were taking notes. I wasn't asking that. I don't know that many people anymore who are with the first person that they were ever with romantically. And I think that some people are good about like going, okay, this is this, you know, especially if you're 18, like your brain wasn't even finished yet.
No. No, she was 20. She's older than me.
She's an older lady. Yeah, then she knew what she was doing.
Oh, yeah. She likes the young stuff. Yeah.
I mean, I'm saying she's more mature. I don't know what happened.
What's number nine?
Number nine.
Segue.
Eavesdropping. You know, when someone's on the phone in another room, you can pick up another phone. Remember that?
Yes. Yeah, my brother and I figured out how we could tap a phone. Yes, we were a House of Republicans.
In the 70s. Igor Lenny.
Yeah.
Eavesdroppers.
No, we kind of tried to, because the wires, there was an open box in the basement for the phone, and we figured out how to do it. Well, not the,
what, you could eavesdrop on like neighbors' calls?
No, ours.
All I have to do is pick up another line in another room.
I know,
room.
But that's
but this
not,
is more exciting.
That's not as cool. Yeah.
Yes.
Wow.
Had the clips.
I never
and
did that. Like, that's pretty cool.
Remember when you weren't able to scream? Like, that's the weirdest thing. You just had no idea who was calling. Just pick up the phone.
Right.
And let the chips fall where they may.
Right. Yeah.
I really, like.
Well, but they also didn't have marketers back then.
And then you
either.
Hang up on them while you're talking. They didn't have.
Do you remember you used to be able to make a call and then nobody would? Yeah, it's the same thing. No one know what your phone number was.
Yes,
and they couldn't, like, it was 4*67.
Oh, our kid called. Yeah. Our son called. They were very young. They were like 7 or 8, and they were calling a friend's house or something. And they heard, and they, "Mom, what's this?" It was a busy signal. They had never heard it.
Yeah, see, that's another one. It's a busy signal.
Yeah, prior to call waiting, sure.
You know what drives me crazy? Before we had caller ID, or even now when a number, and I shouldn't answer a number I don't recognize, but when someone calls and they go, "Hey, Patty, how you doing?" And they don't tell you who they are.
Yeah.
I can't even.
Unless we're besties, I'm like going, have you ever done that? Have you ever done, like,
besties with Johnson. He's really happy.
Yes.
He had a great day with.
Have you ever had to say when someone does it, who is this?
I've been in the point where I thought, okay, any minute now I'm going to figure this out and continue to conversate. Like, I'm hoping that the gist of the conversation will reveal who they are.
Yeah.
And then it's embarrassing because you're like, I've waited too long now and pretended like I was playing along. And yeah, no.
So we're going to see you tonight.
Sure.
Can't wait.
No idea.
Yeah, this is a lot of sales calls. That's the one that's like, hey, Dan, how are you?
Oh, yeah.
Good.
Yeah.
So everything going well? Yeah, it is. You know, I'm going to be in your neighborhood.
Oh.
And I was like, for copiers or IT stuff. And I mean, there's an art to getting people on the phone. You want this level of familiarity.
Authenticity.
Authenticity. No deception.
Keeps coming back.
Here it comes.
You want to be authentic. Let's get to 8. No chance to teach your children phone manners or, more importantly, about safety. How do you rehearse them to say polite things? May I please take down your name and number and have her return your call? Things like that.
Have you done that with your kids?
No, I have not.
I did that with mine.
And you should never say that your parent is not home. My mom's not home right now.
Yeah, they know that.
They know that.
But they don't. They know it doesn't work because they're on their own phone.
Do they? How old were they when they got their own phones?
About 2.5. I'm sorry. So Nate was probably 11.
Mm-hmm.
You know, And then Cooper, of course, because he was the second one. Cooper was the second one. He got the phone younger. But so the manners thing is interesting. I'm troubled by the manners. I don't think I did a good job of teaching my children manners at the table.
I've noticed that when I've taken Griffin out to dinner and stuff like that. I'm working on teaching him, talking to him about ordering too, right? Because it's kind of it's almost like a strange public speaking moment where you're talking to a stranger. I don't know. He seems to get nervous.
Yeah.
I'm gonna get in so much trouble. I'm so sorry, Griffin. He's been listening to my podcasts. And the other night I was talking about changing our front door lock to a push pad, like the keypad, because it's warped and he struggles to open it. And he goes, I wake up one morning and he goes, "Mommy, I can open our front door to save my life." So I was like, I don't know what happened.
I finally understand what that phrase means now.
See, I told him,
open a door to save his life. You mean it's clarity? I've heard that phrase a million times.
To save his life, because I was saying, what if he's being chased
and he needs to save his life,
right? And I said, okay, let's go downstairs. I'm gonna stand right behind you, and I'm gonna start screaming, "Open it! Open it! Open it! Come on, do it now!" So, by the way, that reminds me, in just a few hours, at about 9:30, I will be on the WGN Morning News to talk about my bad parenting moments, including sharing personal stories about my son on the radio and embarrassing him.
Those are pretty good stories, though. I mean, as a parent, they can be a lot more, you know,
the other story,
personal, or a lot more like, you know, like,
or embarrassing, yeah.
Humiliating.
Yeah, the stories that they gave me examples of the other people on the panel. I was like, oh, I've never done that. I was trying to think of like the worst I've ever felt as a parent. I mean, mostly I feel bad when I've let a cold go too long and it turned out to be a bad ear infection or, you know, bronchial thing that I should have been better about staying on top of. But I remember the first time I thought, oh, I'm a horrible person. I was carrying a Griffin in a car seat, you know, the one with the handle, you know, you just like take him anywhere. And I was holding the keys in the same hand and the keys fell on Griffin's face. Oh. And that moment of the look on his face and he was like frozen. And then just the cry, as though like, what is wrong with this world where heavy things just fall on my face, was what he looked like. But that, I remember, that's the worst I ever felt. I know.
Did you have?
It was like, you know, yeah, house keys.
It was like a janitor's ring. Like
Schneider from One Day at a Time.
There were no marks on his face or anything, but I've got the garage key, the garage key. I got the front door key. I've got the car key, a basement key. Yeah, I've got like about six
you
or seven
the
keys.
You got the wine cellar key. You got the cellar key.
Car keys.
So,
is there another? I'm just kind of curious about this phone thing.
Now you want to know. There was acquiring information with a landline. If the person you phoned was busy and told you to hold on for a minute while they set the phone down, you could detect the entire mood of a household. Was a baby crying? Was a romantic music playing? Was a television playing? That's true. When you just put the phone down, I'll be right back. You could hear like background noise.
That's true.
You could hear
it. Wasn't manufactured background noise.
Yeah. Yeah. It was like a peek into someone's household. No finding out what people really think about you. I'd call my sister's house. She'd pick up the kitchen. My brother-in-law would pick up the landline in their bedroom. I'd recognize the opportunity for what it was and instantly keep quiet. So they would talk about like, who's on the phone? It's Dan. Oh, I don't want to talk to Dan. I don't really like him. He's just really annoying.
Your brother-in-law's name is Dan?
No, I'm just saying.
Your sister-in-law.
So, I mean, you can kind of hear that background.
She was talking about me. I get it.
I had one of my best friends in high school. She called and wanted if I wanted to go out, and I did not. And I'm going to say this. I'm going to say a word that maybe a lot of you don't like. But I didn't want to go out, and she was kind of mad at me. And you know when you used to put the phone down, and it would just kind of click, but it didn't hang up right away? And I kind of picked it up, and I heard her yelling, "Bitch!" into the phone. She thought I'd hung up. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, that was surprising. So you do. There are things that you can find out. Because I didn't want to go out that night. I was like, wow,
that's pretty angry.
Weird criteria.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. Did you end up continuing to be friends with her?
I've never told her about that. Yeah, we've been friends since we were in first grade, actually.
Oh my goodness, it's gonna be a tough day tomorrow. A lot of phone calls. I'm worried about Griffin, the old friend.
You just gotta pick up the phone.
This
and
is
that's all you
private information dump on the radio. How many states? 37 states?
38 states in Canada.
38 in Canada.
Plus we're online.
The entire Canada. All of it, right?
All of it. And parts of Canada.
Parts of it?
I think.
Like where?
I'm going to say, I don't know. Manitoba? I don't know. What do you
Alberta?
Winnipeg?
Quebec?
312-981-7200. Give us the reverse charges if you can call us from Canada. We'd appreciate it.
Oh, I'd love it.
Or you can text us 312.
If you're in Banff right now,
love
to hear
it. How about Flin Flon?
See, it's a good thing about not having a landline. You call from the cell, it's all the same price.
Exactly.
She's
right.
I know you're right. My wife and I are going to
Banff.
Banff.
Quebec for our anniversary.
See, Quebec.
Quebec. When, well, where in Quebec?
September 7th.
Where are you going? What part?
We're going to the city. We're going to Quebec City.
Oh,
that's lovely, too. Yeah.
We were thinking about going there this summer, and I forgot that the boys need passports. More after this on 720 WGN.
That's the damnest
thing. Too late. I'm learning some of the new buttons again, so. All right. They're dancing. Keep dancing. Your hat's on backwards now. I like it, Senator. What? Yep. We are calling Treasurer Frerichs for our pretty late wake-up call.
Well, good.
He's having dinner.
He might be up still. Almost 3 a.m.
If he's at the convention there,
I guarantee you.
Yeah, guarantee.
I guarantee. Let's put money on it that he's going to be up.
I've got a quarter.
I'll bet you he's in his nightcap. He's got like a...
He does seem like the
kind
of guy who...
He's reading Dickens right now in his nightcap.
Exactly. He seems like the kind of guy who would have a nightcap, though. He does.
Does he have like a... He's a tall guy, though.
Yeah, he's very lanky, though. Very Ichabod Crane-ish.
Wait. Treasure... Do we have him? I don't hear him.
Hello?
Oh!
See,
it's Patty Vasquez from WGN Radio. We didn't hear the ring. We're calling from WGN. This is Patty Vasquez. We have
Craig Collins,
Esmeralda Leon,
Dan Katowski,
Scott Stantis.
Good morning. Did we wake you up?
I was getting ready to go to bed.
I told you.
You're right.
I win.
Are you wearing a nightcap? We're having this discussion.
Am I wearing a nightcap?
Yes.
No, nor a kerchief.
And he's not reading Dickens. We're all very disappointed. Are you in Philly?
I am in Philly.
How did the evening go?
It's really lame compared to 2008 when some young party animals rented RV, drove out to Denver, crashed a lot of parties, stayed up late night. You just don't have that spirit in a state senate anymore.
Senator Katowski, is he alluding to something that we should know more about?
Yeah, it's one of my colleagues who's no longer there.
it's two of my former colleagues who are no longer there.
There's so many people left the Senate, I can't even keep count anymore.
Who was the other colleague?
I don't know, some guy.
What is happening? I feel like this is the best moment that we've had.
Yes.
Together on the show. And
how are you, Treasurer Frerichs?
Who are you chilling with? Who did you hang out with in Philly? Who were your sans Senator Katowski, who replaced him?
There's this guy, John Culledge, and his wife, Pam.
Oh, okay.
Sat next to me tonight.
Saw you. You look good on TV, buddy.
Hey, thanks very much.
Yeah.
I learned from those two guys how to, like, get front row.
Wait, you were in the front row.
Bold.
How annoying is it when Treasurer Frerichs sits in front of you? The dude's like 6'9".
It's not if you sit on his shoulders.
You should ask Leader Terry Link. He was the one who was sitting behind me.
I would imagine a lot of people were standing. Were people standing for most of Hillary's speech, or were they all sitting?
Well, that's the worst when I'm standing.
Yes,
it feels me just fine when we were both sitting.
And it sounds like it was a very, there were so many things going on this week. There was all the drama with the DNC leaks and then the Bernie Sanders supporters. And then even last night, that video with Rahm Emanuel, with, you know, kind of throwing Rahm Emanuel under the bus for the Obamacare bill. What was the reaction to that? I want to know if there was any rumblings. Can you share any of that?
I cannot share any rumblings.
Okay.
I didn't hear much about it.
Okay.
I think it got a lot of press in the media. I didn't hear a lot of people talking about it.
Okay.
Here on the floor, but I think most people were talking about the secretary, the speeches here. The mayor had a party last night. Maybe it was a big topic conversation there. But I just don't have the stamina, the energy that a young Dan Katowski does. I never seem to speak.
Well, since we have you on the line, I want to make sure that people do know about some of the work that you're doing and finding unclaimed funds.
I was trying to do you a solid, get you on the radio.
I'm just pointing out what an energetic, hardworking guy you are.
There is a better guy in Illinois politics right now than this guy on the phone.
Interesting.
Mike Ferris, he's a good man.
So can we hear his name tossed around for running for governor?
You're gonna hear his name tossed around for a lot of things.
I don't know.
Good stuff. It depends on what he wants to do. Sky's the limit.
We don't want to put you on the spot.
The treasurer's office is a great office. We get to return money to people. And no one believes me when we send them letters. We've done such a good job of telling people to be aware of identity theft that when we send them a letter saying the state of Illinois has money that belongs to them, most people just throw the letters away. If they think the state of Illinois doesn't have any money to give away, but we do. We collect money from banks, from companies, insurance companies that belongs to people here in the state, and we fight very hard to make sure it gets into the pockets, the wallets, the bank accounts of Illinois citizens, because we think it does a lot more good for our economy out there being circulated than it does sitting.
Look at this guy hitting it out of the park at 2 o'clock in the morning.
I know. Go to bed, sir. Safe travels, and we look forward to having you.
3 o'clock in the morning here.
Yeah, no, sorry about that.
Hey, stop trying to one up us.
Thank you so much, sir.